Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Our paradigm shifter today is going to lift your heart, and in more ways than one, actually. This is a story about someone whose journey to Amma, who's the hugging saint, was a journey of going a little bit crazy, if not quite crazy, and expanding into all the weird prompts that your inner psyche wanted to go through in order to break you open. Welcome, Ram Dass Batchelder, is that how you say your name?
That's right, Ram Dass Batchelder. Thank you very much, Veronica.
And
it's
I love you
to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk to you. And I'm reading your book, Rising in Love, and it's my wild and crazy ride to here and now. And I'm really honoring you because what a lot of people don't like to talk about is that to get really integrated into the spiritual path very often takes people through a certain kind of craziness, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I think a lot of people go through a very difficult period of kind of losing their balance a little bit as they awaken to something completely new.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happened with me, is that, you know, I was basically a cynical atheist as a young man. And through a combination of things, and I think it was probably psychotherapy was one part of it, and theater study was another part of it. And smoking marijuana was another part of it. And these three things combined to suddenly awaken me to a whole new different level of reality. Suddenly, the God who I hadn't believed existed was talking to me and telling me jokes and making me laugh and pouring this extraordinary knowledge into me, which no one around me knew anything about. And at least that was what I felt. Like, I'm in a completely new realm, and I'm the only one who knows about this, but God is real and speaking to me, and it was huge, you know? And I had no knowledge about the spiritual path at all. I had no context, a wise context, to put it in. And so I rapidly became a bit deluded. You know, I mean, I had very powerful experiences, including meeting an angel. And when I would smoke a joint, which was my primary spiritual path in those days, and I want to point out, though, that I quit smoking 35 years ago, and I haven't touched any drugs since then.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a pro-drug book, not at all. It's
no, but hang on a sec. You were very, very interesting in how you received some amazing images and some amazing insights while under the influence of various things. And I thought that was worthy of recognizing. And I also think you're right. Like, it's not an advisable path, but it is good to know it wasn't wasted, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Just because you were.
It's not an advisable path, and yet, nonetheless, I mean, I think probably a huge portion of the USA is indulging in some form of that kind of, you know, recreational drug use. So whether we advise it or not, people are doing it. So,
right.
You know, it might be valuable to know that people can look to the possibility of spiritual awakening while they're doing their usual weekend trip or whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't recommend it. You know, if I was going to recommend something, it would be come to meet Amma, have a hug from this living saint, and practice meditation. That's been by far my best path, you know, for the last 35 years. That's been my only path, is meditation and chanting and the presence of a saint, which has been just fantastic, you know.
But
what I found with drugs was that if I, you know, any step forward I took with marijuana, it might lead me to a fantastic experience, but probably it was taking me one step to the left and one step backwards at the same time, and I didn't know that. And, you know, I fell into a very intense delusion for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to some serious depressions and some major confusion. You know, I suffered deeply. It's kind of amazing that I'm alive to tell the tale.
Mm. When you
because
say suffer,
I fell very far.
When you suffered, and, hang on a sec. When you suffered, was it like, did you feel like you were mentally deranged, or did you feel physically pained, or how did you feel?
Well, I'll tell you more honestly what it was, is that, you know, I went through a period when I would smoke a joint, I would literally glow with a visible light.
Wow.
And so people who had never before seen an aura would look at me and go, oh, my God, you're him, aren't you? You've come. It was like I was a messiah, and I thought I was a messiah. Because I had met an angel, and I was glowing like a light bulb, and people, you know, treated me as if this was the case. And so it would seem to me like, well, what else could it be? I didn't have another context for it.
Nobody else said you were a Fruit Loop, huh?
No, and you know, I didn't know about the spiritual path. I didn't know about enlightenment. I didn't know there were gurus and saints in the world. As far as I knew, there was nothing. You know, there had been nothing since Jesus Christ, and I was apparently the number two. You know, that was the level of my spiritual knowledge at the time.
But weren't you raised Jewish?
What's that?
Were you raised Jewish?
Jewish? No, I was raised Christian.
Oh, okay.
But it's Christian / atheist. That is, we were brought to church, mm-hmm. Kind of as a morality training.
Right.
And my parents were both, they did both go to Yale Divinity School, so I had a certain level of, you know, they had a certain level of dedication to morality, let's put it that way. But they both really didn't believe in God.
Ah.
And so it was kind of a funny modern Christianity where you hear about these stories and then afterwards they sort of whisper to you, you know, we don't believe any of that bunk. Right? I don't know how many other people grew up like that, but we were really told, you know, in whispers that science was the truth and God doesn't really exist. And of course, the miracles of Jesus were just stories that were made up. But it's important to be a good person.
Oh.
So this was the morality without spirituality that I grew up with. And it left me with very little, nothing to sink my teeth into, and absolutely no understanding of God, you know. So that's okay. It's what it is. I don't regret the upbringing I had. It's good I was raised with an open mind. But so when I suddenly broke into the discovery that God is real, this was a whole new thing for me.
Mm-hmm. And so what is God?
What is God?
Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, we can talk about all kinds of things. We can say infinite light and love, supreme eternal peace, absolute oneness. And we can also talk about the creator of the entire universal movie,
mm-hmm.
the author, producer, director, and projector of the entire cosmic play.
Mm-hmm.
The one power that is making absolutely everything happen. And the supreme peace that is simply witnessing all of that and enjoying mm-hmm. every moment of it. And you could also talk about the actor within every character, that God is within you, and God is living your lifetime, and it is God within you in this lifetime or some lucky future incarnation who will finally attain full God realization.
Mm-hmm.
So God is the totality. God is the supreme reality. God is infinite love and within you as your own true self, hiding within your own heart.
Well, wait, and Ram Dass, I realized that when you went through these crazy periods, mm-hmm. there's a breaking free, there's a breaking open that seems to have to happen before, or would you say it has to happen before a person can realize his or her divinity? Is that right?
Well, you know, I think in a way things, it can happen differently for each person.
Right.
You know, we're all on the path whether we know it or not, and in a way there's as many paths as there are people. And so I wouldn't say it has to happen in a certain way. It might happen in a very gentle way for somebody. You know, there might be just like looking at a flower. There may be a very gentle blossoming. But for me, it was really, really quite a stunning and exciting, and you could say a bit of a violent break with what I had known before. And you know, people were trying to put me in a mental hospital for a while, and I was actually brought to a mental hospital in a police car and talked my way out of there within about 10 minutes. But, you know, and for a couple of years, I went through a 6-month thing of being the Messiah and, you know, walking around, hey, to see my old friends and say, would you like to smoke a joint? And then like blowing their minds by glowing in the dark.
Oh, gosh.
And then, you know, and then this, you know, I did that for about 6 months, having a fantastic time. But then the whole thing collapsed because it was based in delusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell into deep depression. And I saw myself as a lunatic. And said, oh, my God, what have I done to my life? You know, I thought I was what? Oh, my God, what a joke I am. And then, you know, wanted to kill myself for 6 months. And then I came back out of that into the Messiah thing again. And then fell again after another 6-month period into another depression. And finally, I discovered meditation. I was able to quit smoking marijuana. And I found through some spiritual books, the Saints of India.
Ah.
And it was like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm not the Messiah. I'm just a beginner. And for some reason, God played this great joke on me, and now I know the path. And, I mean, within a week, I went sane.
Well, that's perfect. But what about the glowing? When you're smoking marijuana and your body's glowing, what's that? What's that all about?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to say exactly, but it was probably the Kundalini energy, which is hiding within each one of us. It's actually dormant in the base of the spine in each one of us. And as you do spiritual practices, the Kundalini energy, which is actually a form of the Divine Mother, the form of God, arises through the spine and goes through each of the chakras and opens these chakras. And so it's like the universal energy that turns you on like a light bulb. And this happens naturally through the process of meditation. But for me, because of who knows what my past lives were, you know, in this lifetime, it was a sudden boom, 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 boom. And now I was glowing like a light bulb 30 seconds after I've taken a puff of weed.
Is that what turning on means?
I guess so.
But also, Ram Dass, your parents and your siblings were relatively, what would we call it, accommodating, accepting? They were really helpful.
You know, they were doing their best, you know? They were doing their best. They were very, they're very supportive people. They're very open-minded and loving.
Yes.
But, and, you know, my parents were scared silly, you know, and obviously their son had gone insane, and they had no, you know, spiritual connection, really, and no way of putting, they had no context for what I was going through either, other than, you know, my mother was in training to be a psychotherapist at the time, so she was full of labels for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but they took me to see their, you know, like my mother's a supervising psychiatrist in her training program, and he recommended I be put under observation. So, you know, all they would have needed would have been to take me to two other psychiatrists and, you know, convince them that I should be in a hospital, and they could have had me locked up, but they didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I'm very grateful they didn't do that. They had the courage and the love to go into therapy with me and kind of walk through the fire of my bizarre transformation. You know, they give me so much support, you know, and this is amazing. It saved my life, I'm sure, that they were paying for my therapy. And, you know, we were in therapy together for, I don't know, a few months, and then I was getting individual therapy. And all this was helping me get grounded. And, you know, it was a couple of years process before I discovered meditation. And once I discovered meditation, it was like, okay, I've gone sane now. I get it. I know where I am. And it was then a gradual, step-by-step ascent into peace and stability and creativity and a beautiful, fulfilled life.
Ah.
So that's kind of amazing. It's a beautiful story. And now I'm married to a beautiful woman, and I'm the author of 6 books and traveling with a God-realized saint, and we're having a great time.
Wow. Well, Ram Dass, when you're talking about a lot of that process, I think it's really important for people to understand, like, how would somebody, as somebody who you're in the family and you're acting out and you're being bonkers in some ways and you think you're the Messiah, how would, in the listeners, how would they be able to support someone close to them in that, in order to help them evoke? Because you said it was when you studied the lives of saints or something that you got the meditation bit of information. How would you recommend people help one another, you know?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't feel fully qualified. I would think maybe a psychotherapist would be better to give an answer on that one, other than I can say, use your best wisdom to give love and support in the way that you feel is right. Because, you know, what I went through might not be quite like what somebody else is going through, even if it might be similar in some way. So somebody might need medication. Somebody else might need hospitalization.
But you see people sitting on the streets, and some of them, I look into their eyes, and some of them are so hurt and broken. And I just, I hurt because you don't know how to enter their world. And you did that in your book. You entered the world of several of those people, did you not?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I feel very, very blessed to have made it out alive.
Ah,
you know, and even more blessed to have ended up with a gorgeously fulfilled life. You know, this is amazing. It's quite a miracle, and I'm sure that it's really the grace of Amma, my guru, who blessed that whole process and let it even be turned into a book which can help other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did make a point in the book about, you know, how in India, when somebody has a spiritual awakening and says they see God, somebody will say, "Oh, that's fantastic, my boy. Come with me to my ashram. You can meet my guru." Take this picture of Lord Krishna and meditate on it, and you will have a vision, like this. They will give you support because they understand it. But in America, it's much more likely to be, okay, he's had a psychotic break. We should give him Thorazine and medicate him forcefully if necessary. And then, the kid gets locked up and he gets poked by these people who think he's sick and they put labels on him. And if that had happened to me, very likely, instead of a full awakening, it might have ended in suicide.
Yeah, I can see that that would be right. But I think it helps for people to really understand what you're saying and go, wow, we really need to look at aberration thinking and strange delusions. We need to look at it differently. Because I noticed you entered that fellow Patrick that you picked up on the street there. You entered the way he thought. You kind of learned to interact with him, at least for a brief period. And I thought that was very courageous.
Yeah, I did. I met this guy during that sort of wild and crazy time of my life. This guy he told me he had just escaped from a mental hospital, and he had been in prisons and mental hospitals and orphanages all his life. And he was so charming in his innocence and his complete helplessness, that I just said, well, he's my friend. I have a place to stay, and let me take him home, because I thought if I leave him out here on the street, he's going to be in big trouble.
Right.
And so,
compassion.
I did that. I brought him home to my one-room apartment, and a tiny little apartment, and shared it with him for several months, and it was actually a beautiful experience. So it was part of my spiritual training. It was knowing there was a knowledge in me that everything and everyone is really God.
Mm-hmm.
So this was part of my spiritual awakening, and so there was nobody who was separate from God, and this crazy guy who had no teeth, he was so cute, just to bring him home and give him love and give him care and give him support, which just seemed a natural expression of the spiritual awakening that I was going through.
So as you broke open and you went through these incredibly painful periods of up and down and delusion and illusion, we all hear this, life is an illusion. Do you think it's all related to that?
Well, ultimately, yes, that's absolutely what we really are. What we really are is the supreme reality, and everything else is an illusion created by the mind. But that's a very high level of spiritual philosophy, and most people maybe don't benefit from that so much. Although to understand that we can awaken to the reality that we are the supreme being itself, that's an amazing piece of knowledge. That's what we really are. That the I within you, if you deeply investigate what that is, it blossoms into the supreme reality, and that's what you really are already. So that's a fantastic piece of truth.
So how do you investigate? Is that is there a way? Is it meditation?
Well, yeah, I meditation, spiritual practices of one kind or another. That's the way. And the root of all of them is devotion to God, mm-hmm. or you can call it that great yearning to know who you truly are,
mm-hmm.
the great yearning for truth. What is this? What are we living? Who am I really? What is the reality? And I want to realize that I must know it. So it's that quest, the sincerity and the intensity of that quest to merge in God, to reunite with the supreme love.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the root of all the spiritual practices, whether it's meditation or chanting the names of God or asking, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many different paths, and it can also be selfless service. It can be going out and serving the poor. Whatever it is, with that one intention of knowing the one reality that shines within everything, I want to know that supreme reality. What is that? Mm-hmm. And I must merge in that, and I must become one with that.
Did you have that as a young person inside yourself? Did you have an urge like that?
Well, I don't think I was really all that extraordinary a child. I really don't think so. I was a very ordinary American boy, really, with the mind thinking mostly about sex, I think you could say. Although I'd had some glimmers of higher knowledge when I was a child, but just glimmers. And I don't think they were that important. I mean, there was some experiences when I was young, like when I was 5 years old, having kind of an ecstatic experience when some choir was singing, when the saints go marching in, and suddenly I was kind of like glowing like a light bulb at the age 5.
Wow.
And full of bliss, inexplicably.
Oh.
I had some experiences like this, but I don't think I was that unusual.
And you don't think you were really earnest about replicating them, bring them on again, huh?
No, I didn't. I didn't have the cultural base. I didn't have the support for that. I didn't have any knowledge of it. You know, the experiences did come. I mean, my wife is just reminding me of another experience I had when I went to have a dental operation, and the dentist gave me laughing gas, and I went into this extraordinary experience of being the universal being, so full of bliss and spinning round and round in this ecstatic. Like whirligig ride, and seeing that the idea that I was that little boy in the dentist chair was hysterically funny because I knew I was the supreme bliss, and this idea that I was a person was so funny. I just had to keep laughing. So it was, that was kind of a clue, you know, a little clue. You have a different, there's a different level to what you really are. You're not the person. You are the supreme being.
Yeah,
and
that's wonderful.
It was just a little taste of that.
All right, so let's move into meeting Amma. How did all that happen?
Well, let's see. Well, you know, once I quit smoking weed and started meditation, I went up to Massachusetts and found a beautiful girlfriend who wanted to practice tantric sex, and we studied the Course in Miracles for a couple of years together. And then, you know, I was like, enough with sex. I wanted to become a saint. I wanted I had read Autobiography of a Yogi, and I wanted to become like these yogis. And so I made some inquiries and heard that, oh, there's a saint coming from India. Why don't you go meet her? And so I drove to Boston. And very impressive energy at this program. And there's this lovely short woman up on stage, very interesting, singing these gorgeous songs. And I went up in the queue to meet her afterwards, and everybody was getting a hug from her. And as I got fairly near her, I started feeling this heat in my body. Like, what is this? This is interesting. And then she gives me this very warm, intimate hug and puts her finger on my forehead for just a few seconds. And I had these blazing flashes of lightning in my brain. And I sat down afterwards and wondering what was going on, and I ate the piece of candy she had given me and decided to stay overnight in my car to see her again the next day where I could ask questions. And meanwhile, the lightning show continues in my brain all night long, so I really couldn't sleep much, but I was fascinated. Like, what in the world? She touches my forehead for 3 seconds, and I get lightning all night long in my brain?
Mm.
So this is not an ordinary person, you know. This is something very powerful here. And so actually, you know, I went the next day, and it's quite a funny story, but it's kind of a long story. But it was actually the next year when I came back to see her again that I realized I had a very, very powerful kind of explosion where I realized this is God incarnate. This is the reason I've come to the earth. She knows everything about you. She is your guru, and she's the embodiment of Jesus and Buddha and all the masters that you've ever read about. This is God incarnate, and she's the reason you've come, and this is your guru. And I went up to her, burning with this desire to be part of her group, to be chosen by her. You know, I said, wow, I understand, this is my guru. And, but shouldn't she call me? Shouldn't she tell me so? You know, and I went up, and as she gave me the hug, she whispered in my ear, join us.
Ah.
And it was like a bomb going off, which was like, okay, end of old life, beginning of new life.
Nice.
Yeah, but it was extremely powerful. And the love that awoke in my heart at that time has just continued ever since.
But didn't she reject you at one point as well?
Well, no, Amma never. She could never reject, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not in her to reject anybody. What happened was, after I had been in her ashram from 1989 to 1995, traveling with her all year round, I started shifting in my understanding to some new ideas, right? I became attached to the idea that there's no individual free will and that everything is predestined.
Okay.
And what I am is the supreme reality, not the person. The person is just a little character in the movie. But I am not in that movie. I am the supreme being in which the movie floats like a little bubble. And it's all predestined. And the problem was that this was working beautifully for me in my meditation, but it doesn't fit in so well with Amma's public teachings. Because she doesn't teach that. She says, of course you have free will. Use it wisely. Turn your life to God and serve all beings. You know. So it suddenly dawned on me, well, maybe I don't belong in this organization. I thought, maybe I'm about to attain enlightenment, but if I'm in this organization, how could I speak my truth? You know, I think everything is predestined, so maybe I have to leave. And I was writing Amma a letter about this, and just about halfway through the writing process, I suddenly heard Amma's voice inside me saying, enough, I have heard your letter, go.
Oh, I see.
So it was... You know, and it turned out to be, I was then 7 years in India going to various other gurus, and I met maybe 35 saints.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a spiritual education. You know, I had many beautiful and powerful experiences. But you see, what I knew already, I knew long ago, that Amma is the universe. But Amma is not that little body, and she's not limited to one organization. You know, I knew that she is the supreme reality, and there's no way to leave her. I could go from one little part of her universal body into another. You know, I could, because the whole world is her organization. She's not limited by that form.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew there was no way to leave her, but it might be wise for her to put me in some other location for who knows why.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be the best way for me to attain enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sent me basically on a 7-year pilgrimage where I went to many other gurus and had many experiences and gained new knowledge and had new opportunities to serve. And then she brought me back to her original organization and with a fiance, and she ended up marrying us.
It was actually
very beautiful to have the whole thing wrapped up in one package called Amma.
So you brought your fiancé back from another ashram?
That's right. I met her in another ashram and told her about Amma. And then she came to meet Amma, and she fell in love with Amma. And then it was through this way that Amma brought me back to her ashram.
Ah, isn't that lovely? Wow, what a story. But the other thing is, all through your book, once you've connected with her, it seems that she speaks to you no matter where you are and what you're doing. And that's what you're saying is supreme intelligence. Is that right?
Yeah. She's omnipresent. This is certainly my experience of her. She's omnipresent and omniscient. And I have no doubt that she's hearing us talk right now.
Yeah.
You know, I know that she hears every thought in my mind. That's my experience. I wouldn't expect everybody else to have the same opinion. And one thing that's nice about Amma's organization is that, you know, people are free to come and have their own experience, and nobody's telling them what they have to think.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, yeah, I know Amma to be the omniscient, all-pervading supreme reality. It's like the best image for me is that Amma is the infinite ocean of consciousness, and we are like the waves on that ocean.
Hmm.
And Amma's body appears to be like another wave,
mm-hmm.
but there's no barrier of ego in that wave. And so that wave is actually one with the whole ocean. And so she's always within us. She is the consciousness within each one of us. She already knows us because she is us.
So can listeners reach for her at this point without having a hug?
Well, absolutely. You know, one thing you can do, a very simple thing, is just to go onto her USA website, which is www.amma.org. Amma.org. And there you can see the tour dates for the summer. She's going all the way across the country. And so, I mean, the best thing is really to come and get a hug.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be in the USA through July, through like the 20th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the best thing, is to come and meet her yourself and then have whatever your experience is. Come and check out. She does amazing charity work mm-hmm. all around the world.
And she has communities, doesn't she? Doesn't she set up communities in different places?
Well, I wouldn't say so much about communities. The main ashram, but there are many ashrams. I think there are, I don't know, six different ashrams in the USA.
Mm, okay.
So these are, you know, places where people come and meditate and live. and do spiritual practices, and they also engage in these charitable activities which are happening around the world. And they've done things such as build 45,000 houses for the poor and for the victims of the tsunami and earthquakes in India.
Yeah, that's
and,
wonderful.
Amazing work. I mean, incredible. And they have a huge hospital, one of the best hospitals in India, where you know, much of the service is given free to the poor, including heart transplants and liver transplants. It's very high quality.
Hmm.
And
it all comes from
50
donations.
Schools and all these programs for the poor. They have orphanages and programs of feeding like 10 million people a year in India.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever there's a disaster anywhere in the world, like AMA will send a team of volunteers and a big donation of money and medicine. It's quite impressive what she's doing. I mean, everything she's doing is an expression of compassion, and it's compassion, you know, grounded in wisdom and action.
Mm-hmm.
So she's, you know, she trains doctors and she sends them out into the world, and they're doing, you know, just what needs to be done when there's a giant flood or something. Like there was a huge flood in North India last year, and she gave $8 million, and they've rebuilt 3 villages, or maybe it's, I think, 8 villages that they're completely rebuilding from the ground up that were washed away by this flood.
Wow, and the monies are donations and so on from people around the world, are they?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool is that the donations, you know, all the work is done by volunteers, and so there's no overhead.
Mm.
So the donations go straight to the service of the poor.
Wow, that's wonderful. Also, you know what? This is a small change of subject, or maybe it's a big one. I don't know. You'll decide, but the talk of miracles in the book, I am musing on that a lot, is like, what is a miracle? Could you say her ability to be universal consciousness is transcending what we're dealing with in the thicker dimensions of the 3D? What would you say a miracle is?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to explain that one, but I'll, you know, I could do my best just to jump into the question that, you know, ultimately the universe is all a projection of God, and it's all really made of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things appear to be solid, but actually, if you ask a physicist about it, you'll say, no, it's actually just energy.
Right.
And if you ask a quantum physicist, they'll say, no, it's not just energy, it's really just consciousness. That's ultimately what it is. So the quantum physicists are saying what the ancient sages have said, which is really the only reality is consciousness itself, or pure awareness.
Mm.
But so the what we see as the world is a manifestation of consciousness, and someone who is merged in the universal consciousness, who is one with the creator of the whole cosmic play, has the power then to manifest anything they want, and to change one appearance into another appearance, because it's all just consciousness. So they have merged in the universal power. They become the infinite when they attain God realization. And so then they can make any changes they want at any time.
So that's why Vibhuti comes in, or jewels off of Sai Baba's hand, that sort of thing. Is that where that comes from? It seems like it, eh?
Yeah, that's right. It's an expression of divine will. It's an expression of the reality that God is all-powerful and can do anything God wishes can be manifested. So it's at a certain point it becomes, okay, that's obviously true. I've seen so many miracles myself that I cannot not doubt that miracles are possible, but I also know that ultimately they're not really important. What's important is that we grow to attain, you know, God realization ourselves. So that's the state of God realization is beyond miracles. And, you know, it's most people recommend that you don't get caught up in miracles. You don't pursue magical powers. You can get magical powers, but usually they end up being a distraction.
Actually, I don't know if I was thinking as much about magical powers as I was thinking about universal consciousness and
right.
How much exists beyond the third dimension. And I think a lot of people are in quotes awakening these days to
yes.
really feel and express that, even if they're not following. Let's jump into another thing. What is it like to be with a guru? Is it really important for us to each find a guru, or can we do it? Can we find our God consciousness without one?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, and I think most people say, yes, you need a guru.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, but I think that, you know, as we begin our spiritual practices, when we're ready, the guru is going to show up in your life.
Right.
And so you don't necessarily need to come to India. You could come to India and wander around and not find a guru, and then you come back to your hometown, and suddenly a guru, you know, shows up in your living room that you had no idea, right? A friend calls, hey, come over, there's somebody here, and you meet your guru. So I'm not going to say that's the only way. You know, prayer, meditation, these are things that you have right in your living room. In this moment, the divine is within you. Mm-hmm. And so to say that something external has to happen, no, you know, really to turn within and meditate and pray and sincerely ask for the guidance and the grace, it can come in many different ways. I think that, you know, the recommended is to connect with a living God-realized master. And the grace that comes through a God-realized master is very, very powerful. And, you know, it could be said, as Jesus said, no man comes unto the Father except through me. And we say that meaning not just Jesus, but through any God-realized master, that you have to come through that door of a God-realized being, because the grace necessary for enlightenment has to come through that conduit. And, you know, this may be true, but I'm also inclined to say, well, but there are examples of, for instance, Ramana Maharshi, who attained enlightenment at age 16 without contact with a guru. And mm-hmm. Amma also, you know, being a divine incarnation, she had no living guru. She just blossomed right into God realization.
But you're saying that it can come from your soul's journey and where you've been before and what you've refined in your own soul. Is that right?
Well, you certainly, the first steps can be made in your own living room in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sincere turning to God in prayer and the yearning for God realization, for enlightenment, and the commitment to that and the prayer for oneness with God, this will take you forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I do certainly recommend coming to meet Amma. She's one of the greatest God realized masters ever to walk the earth, you know, and she's giving hugs. I was sitting with Amma in India a couple of months ago, watching her hug 40,000 people a day at some of these programs she does in India. And it just occurred to me, this has never before been done.
No.
You know, there have been many great masters, and they've all been amazing in their own way, but no one has ever hugged 30 million people. You know, she is so accessible. And that is just, I think it's really, really rare. I think there's never been anybody quite like this on the earth.
Can I tell you
so much for so many to give, you know, so many people a taste of the divine? It's really something special.
And can I tell you my little story of meeting Amma?
Sure.
It was years ago, and I was sick, really sick, and I was in the Bay Area. It was pouring with rain. It was cold. And to see her, I had to leave home around 6 in the morning because of traffic and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I went, I can't do it. I'm going to go back to sleep. And I just got up and went, and I was feeling really terrible and went into the back of a crowded mm-hmm. room where everybody was steaming with rain off their wool coats and so on. And then in comes this little lady, in walks right through, and I started to cry. The room just filled up with this energy, and I'm an energy worker, so I just cried and cried and cried.
Wow.
It was so amazing and so beautiful. So I just want to tell everyone, just that alone, I got my hug. I had a wonderful time there that day, and I was also not sick anymore. Warhol.
Wow, how about that?
How about that? I mean, I think there's really something wonderful about that for people who are listening as well.
No, she is definitely an amazing divine being. It's mm-hmm. it's a very rare, rare incarnation that we have here.
Mm-hmm. Well, is she called an avatar?
I certainly consider her an avatar. You know, that is to say, an incarnation of God. To me, there's no other possible name for what she is. But, you know, not everybody's comfortable with that. So, you know, the bottom line is she's one of the greatest humanitarians in the modern world,
mm-hmm.
and she's doing beautiful charity work. So that's the bottom line, and anybody can come in and have their own experience and, you know, have a hug and feel what they feel. So for me, she's definitely an incarnation of the supreme reality. She's an, you know, embodiment of the supreme love and omniscience.
And also, her politics is really get in there and get to work with everyone, right? That's her political leadership, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say so much politics, but she does work with world leaders,
mm-hmm.
and
That's what I was wondering. Does she?
Yes, she does. She's like a friend of the Indian Prime Minister. She's worked with many of the leaders in India, and I don't know who else in the U.S. Although local leaders like town mayors will come and garland her and give her awards and things like this in America.
Mm-hmm.
But
she hasn't sat in Congress yet, hey?
No, actually, they called her. They called her for a special meeting, and she's been to Congress and met with some Congress people.
Oh wow, that's wonderful news.
Yeah,
hey?
Yeah.
Because I keep thinking about the shift on the planet, and she, with that vibration that she's got, she must have a lot of people shifting around her, a lot of people awakening around her, right?
Yes, of course. There are many, many, many people awakening by her grace. And it's a gentle, loving awakening. You know, it's about compassion. It's about developing all the good qualities and humility and surrender to the Supreme and service to all beings. So it's very beautiful, very inspiring to be around this group of people.
So are you living in an ashram now?
Well, my wife and I do have an apartment in Amma's ashram in India.
Mm.
And right now we're traveling with her throughout the USA, and we'll go back to India after the tour is over in July.
And what's it like living in an ashram? Can you tell us a bit about that?
I love it. It's really fun for me. It's, we can make our own schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I just do my best to do as much meditation as I can because I love meditation. That is just bliss. And we also do various service activities in the ashram. My wife and I work in the canteen where we serve food, and I work as a cashier. We get to sit in Amma's presence for hours a day. That's the bottom line, really.
Hmm.
We can go up in a little queue and sit right next to Amma for a couple of minutes and pass her the candies that she's giving out as prasad, as
mm-hmm.
her blessing to the people that she's hugging. So that's a very intimate, couple of minutes where you're right next to her, working with her as she gives her blessing to people. That's extremely sweet. And we can meditate right behind her on stage while she's hugging the masses. And, the bliss and peace that she's radiating, it's like a sun. So you get close to her, and she's radiating this into you, and it's just like, wow, instant bliss,
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. So when you say you meditate, do you have, like, mantras, and do you chant all the time? And then I also want you to talk about the play you wrote.
Well, Amma does give mantras, and I do have a mantra.
Okay.
But my primary focus, I do love my mantra, but my primary focus is actually the question, who am I?
Okay. That's a Ramana Maharshi thing, too.
That's right. I have gone very deep into the teachings of Ramana Maharshi and many other masters like Nisargadatta Maharaj. So the path of Jnana Yoga, the path of wisdom, is more my path. Of course, it's the same as devotion because it's aiming for the supreme oneness. It's the path to the supreme oneness with God.
And
so it's an expression of devotion. But this question, who am I, takes me to that deep silence of oneness with the supreme peace.
And Amma teaches devotion, right?
Amma appreciates devotion in whatever path. So she who is guiding me in this meditation as the shortcut for me to attain God realization. But for me, she loves devotion in whatever form because she knows that that's the path that's best for most people in this world.
Mm.
Kind of like 99% benefit from devotion. And she says devotion is like it gives the sweetness from the beginning. The sense of love is so sweet that, all you need to do is chant the name of God with love and you immediately get some response.
Hmm.
The path of Jnana Yoga, which is this who am I question, is a little bit more difficult and more likely to give the bliss only after a long time.
Okay, and but you still choose it. Tell me about this. How many people... How many of us can get God realization in this life? Can we all potentially get it or achieve it?
Oh, we can all definitely. We can all definitely get it. It's definitely it's what we are. It's what we, it's the very innermost essence of all beings. And so we all will definitely get it eventually in some lucky incarnation or another. And I would just like to encourage everybody to go for it 100% now, no matter what their life looks like, because it's the goal of life.
And that's
I wouldn't put a limit on how many can get it. I think just, gosh, go for it with all your love and all your energy because it's the only real peace. it's the final solution, and nothing else really fully satisfies.
And so you're saying that devotion, meditation, service to others,
and the grace of the guru.
And the grace of the guru.
These combine to blossom the heart into the realization that God is everywhere and that you are that Supreme One that pervades all.
Hmm. I just love that. So talk about your play that you created. Do you mind talking about that, or is that too far back in your legend there?
No, yeah. Well, I wrote several plays for Amma. And these were performed in the USA many years ago, and they're wonderful shows, and they're really fun. I love to write for Amma, and I do love to, you know, I'm sort of very American in my, you know, I was very American in my upbringing, and I love to bring the American humor and combine it with the highest wisdom that I can in such a way that an American audience enjoys the presentation and feels free to laugh and feels it's okay to be American and also be spiritual. I don't have to be Indian in order to be spiritual.
Well, that's
and I don't have to be all scrubbed up and all serious in order to enjoy and in order to grow towards God. So that's part of what this, most of the whole book, The Rising in Love, is focused on this, you know, it's okay to be human as we grow towards the divine, and it's okay to laugh.
Mm-hmm. What do you wear, Ram Dass?
Well, right now, I'm wearing basically jeans and an Indian kurta, an Indian shirt.
Oh, okay.
in India, in the ashram, we tend to wear white cotton.
Okay.
It's kind of traditional ashram wear in India. You go to just about any ashram and most people are wearing white cotton. But in the West, actually, we used to wear white in the West also, but the ashram people requested that we wear ordinary Western clothes so that we don't look like a group of nutcases. We don't look like a cult, you know?
So do you also help Amma develop her tours? Do you do outreach for her? How does all that happen?
Well, whenever we can, we do our best to shine Amma's light and love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this might be through Facebook posts, and it's just nothing that's been requested, but just rather than just a natural expression of this is what I love, and this is the most beautiful thing I've ever found or even ever heard of, so let me tell people about it. You know, this is a natural one desire in me to share with the world the treasures of spirituality and the treasure of Amma, who's living right here now. My gosh, you know. And walking right through our neighborhood, maybe, and people don't know. It's crazy. I want to tell people about Amma. So there's a natural feeling of outreach, of wanting to express, you know, on the internet and through my books. You know, this is the sixth book I've written in Amma's service. Four children's books.
Oh, good.
There was also a big desire in me to help bring spiritual knowledge to the young people so they get a good start.
And do you have children of your own?
No, I guess you could say my books are my children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt I never have really had the desire for children and rather want to spend my time in meditation and in writing, in service to the world, because life is so short. My God, if you have a child, then I would have to change my life drastically. You know, I'd have to go get probably a full-time job, and where would be the time for meditation?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting when you owed money in America for taxes, Amma was quick to say, go over there and get a job and pay it.
Right? Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
I had to go back at one point and work in New York City to pay off a tax debt. So
that was good.
I've done
that.
I don't know if I can do it, but I much prefer to spend, instead of 8 hours at a computer desk, to spend 8 hours in meditation and service and writing something. If I'm going to be at a computer, let it be writing about God in service of humanity.
That's wonderful. Now tell us about your children's books. I think a lot of us would love to have our hands on some children's books that help children feel that love.
Yeah, and tell them about enlightenment. You know, tell them about who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first one is called You Are the King.
Okay.
And it's basically an old parable rewritten about a king who goes wandering into town dressed as a gardener so we can have a little vacation from the king thing, and he gets mugged, and his money gets stolen, he gets hit over the head, and he gets amnesia, and he doesn't remember who he was. And so he becomes a beggar. And eventually one of his ministers comes to him and recognizes him. Oh my God, you're the king. We've been looking for you for weeks. And whispers in his ear a special word that the king would recognize. And the king's memory awakens and goes, oh my God, I am the king.
Wow.
Now, this is it's a metaphor for the spiritual path. We are all the king. That is, we are all truly the divine self. We are the supreme being, but we've forgotten. And we've come to think that we're these bodies begging for pleasure from the various things in the world. So we're out there begging for pennies. Well, in fact, the treasure of supreme bliss is within us all the time. And the word that the minister whispers to the king is sort of symbolic of the mantra, which helps us awaken to our divinity.
And what are the other ones? I love that. First of all, what are the other ones? And also, we can probably get hold of those on Amazon or something, can we?
Well, the best way to get them, You Are the King is available on Amazon.
Okay.
The next book was called Wendy the Wave, The Awakening of Wendy the Wave. And it goes into that image which I shared about the ocean and the waves. And that's a beautiful book. In a way, it's my favorite. It's most profound. The image of the ocean and the waves conveys so much. And that's available at Amos Programs.
Okay.
In the U.S. And then the next book was called The Triumph of Amos Grace, which is also an old parable rewritten in rhyming verse, which is, talks about a little bird whose egg gets stolen by the ocean.
Oh.
The ocean comes in the form of a tsunami to steal her egg. And the little bird tries desperately to empty out the ocean and, of course, ends up exhausted and totally at the point of despair. And meanwhile, the giant bird Garuda, who's like the mount of Lord Vishnu, you know, God's eagle, sees her suffering from below and manages to get the ocean to give the egg back.
Oh.
And of course, this is also symbolic of ours, the struggling that we, you know, the egg is like the egg of God realization. We've all lost that. Where is it? We want to get it back from the ocean of samsara.
Oh.
And meanwhile, the guru sees that we have to struggle. We have to make our struggle in meditation and effort and in chanting the names of God or praying. That's the little bird trying to empty out the ocean. And finally, the guru's grace comes and says, I see how hard you want that egg back. Okay, I'll do it for you. And the guru comes and gives the egg back.
Wow. So that is grace, really. All those books have a real dollop of grace.
That's right. And it also the story also talks about the pollution in the ocean is why the ocean got so confused and was so sad and angry that it stole the egg. And so it then morphs into a thing about global warming at the end. So that's a very beautiful book.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And so you've got four children's books.
And the next one is called God is Everywhere. That's a lovely book, a dialogue between a mother and son about the nature of God.
Ah, and these are aimed at what age group? Are these middle school or?
Well, yeah, you could probably read it to probably from a 4 years old up until, you know, maybe 10 years old.
I really appreciate that. So let's go back into, before we end this, talk a bit about Amma's tour. And about your wonderful book called Rising in Love, which I have to say has a lot of that spiritual light in it. I mean, it really is more than being a fascinating story of your journey. It's got a really good light in it and made my heart open and expand and long for Amma. That's what I did reading it.
That's lovely. That's lovely. A lot of people say that they have received Amma's blessing through the book, that they had some kind of awakening as they were reading it, or that they cried their way through it or laughed their way through it, or a lot of people are saying they've had powerful experiences through the book.
Well, so you're really effective, eh?
Yeah, it's really fun to hear from people. You know, somebody sent me a before and after photo of them before they read the book and then 2 months afterwards, and it does not look like the same person. She said, this book helped me to love myself in a way I never knew I could.
I love it.
Cool.
Really touching me.
Yeah.
And I thank you for that. So talk a bit about her tour and where you're going. And you're not going in an old Chevy or whatever it was across the country on $50.
No, this time we are going in some kind of Mercedes motorhome. I haven't even seen the vehicle yet. We've been traveling with friends up until this point. But from now on, we're going across in a Mercedes motorhome with a couple of other friends that we've just met.
You guys at home, you're going to love the parts of the book where he and a friend try to cross the country following Amma, and they've got no money.
And without a penny
and with a breakdown car, right?
Yeah, it broke down inexplicably. Every 50 miles, it stalled out, and we were stuck on the edge of the highway until, by some miracle of grace, the car started running again. We had a great time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's a wonderful story. It's a good metaphor, too, for our journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
So tell us about her journey, and then we'll have to say goodbye.
Well, you know, I think I should probably just say the most important thing I can say is take a look at the website, www.amma.org, amma.org, and look at the tour schedule and see when Amma is coming to a city near you. So we're going from L.A. We'll be in L.A. from the 14th to the 18th. And then I believe the next stop is Santa Fe, New Mexico. Maybe it's in Albuquerque. And then Dallas and Chicago. And we're going to Atlanta, Georgia for the first time ever.
Oh, good.
And I believe after Atlanta, it's Boston and then New York City. And Washington, D.C. is in there somewhere, too.
Wow. Does she ever get tired?
What's that?
Amma doesn't ever get tired, eh?
You know, she never gets tired. This is one of the most amazing things about her is that she gives these programs for 20 hours at a stretch without a break. She's giving hugs. And, you know, that's after hugging people all day long. She'll take a two-hour break and come back and do a program which lasts for 20 hours.
Wow.
All night long. And, you know, sometimes until noon the next day.
Wow.
And then she gets up at the end full of radiant energy and throws flower petals on everybody. And it's the most amazing revelation of divinity. I mean, she's absolutely superhuman in her energy level.
Wow.
It's something I could never, I know, I have to sleep. And, you know, in some of these programs, she doesn't take a bathroom break for a 20-hour program. And meanwhile, I have to go to the bathroom 5-6 times, you know. So she's functioning at a completely different level.
So she's living in a whole different kind of reality. Well, bless her. I don't think she minds if we bless her as well, even though she's the blessing saint, right?
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Ram Dass Batchelder, for Rising in Love, My Wild and Crazy Ride to Here and Now with Amma, the Hugging Saint.
Veronica, I should give you the website.
Please.
For how people can get that book.
Okay.
It's www.rising-inlove.org. rising-inlove.org.
All right. Because it's such a, I mean, it's just such a wonderful book.
Thank you so much, Veronica. I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
And thank you for your journey on the planet. It's been wonderful talking to you.
What a pleasure it is to talk to you, Veronica.
You take care and thank you for everything.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
God bless everybody.
Blessings. Bye.
Bye.